before every recording for one of these, it's like a commercial for Mank. It's Richard swearing at his computer for 20 minutes. And Richard knows how to swear, let me put it that way. Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And I have a cold, so my
voice...
You have
a cold again? Didn't you have one like last time?
Two? No.
No?
I sent you an email saying I had a cold.
Oh, sorry.
That's probably what you're toking in on there.
Sorry.
I don't know why I used toking in. It's been a really long couple of weeks. Okay, so this is primarily the Comic-Con report, which I returned from, was back a day, and then caught a cold.
Sweet.
But do you want to quickly run through the other things first, or do you want to do them at the end?
Whichever you want.
All right. I want to just dive in.
Sure.
So Comic-Con... It's the biggest comic book convention in the world, basically.
It was funny because whatever news you get out of there has never anything to do with Comic-Con in the general culture.
Well,
in comics, it's all about movies.
And a lot of people bitch about how, it's not, it's all about movies now, and they've taken over, and it's not about comics.
Yeah.
And a couple, like one of the organizers pointed out, well, actually, if you go back and look at the original program guides from the early ones, it at that time was also about media and movies as
was
well.
It, really?
It was sort of about how comics and how comics influence other media. So it's always been that way. It's just that the size of the
which is funny because at that time, what's that, the early 70s?
I don't actually know. It's been around for a while.
I can't think of, I don't think of anything back then that was influenced by comics much in the way that now everything seems to be.
Yeah, it's definitely in an up cycle. You know,
cool.
It'll cycle back down. But, you hear that complaint a lot, but it's, if you actually do your research, it's a little specious. But the other big complaint is that it's too big. Kind of like the E3 complaints. It's too big. And while it is massive, if you get a list of everything that's going on ahead of time and plan ahead, it's not impossible to do what you want to do, but Comic-Con is all about, prioritizing and what are you going to throw overboard or what are you going to sacrifice so that you can do what you really want to do. And that's the worst part of the whole thing. So...
And waiting in lines for three hours.
Yeah, if you really like waiting in lines, that well, a ride at the end.
Welcome to Comic-Con.
Comic-Con is your ball of wax. So it's a Thursday through Sunday deal, and if you buy a 4-day pass, there's also a Wednesday night preview night.
Did you go to that?
No, mainly because I wanted an extra day of pay at my job. So we flew in Sunday night and got there about 11. Wednesday night. So again, my wife was with me, but she was just doing beach stuff. Mm-hmm. She had zero interest in actually going to the Comic-Con, not that I blame her. And my buddy John was supposed to go, but he had some girlfriend drama at the last minute and had to drop out. So it was just me flying solo with 120,000 of my closest nerd buddies. So I get there Thursday morning, and the exhibit hall opens at 10 a.m. I had pre-registered online, and the deal is you bring in your printed out barcode thing, and they scan it and give you a badge. So I get there probably about 9 a.m. From the hotel, and of course the line for the pre-registered A starts at the other end of the convention center, which is, it's enormous. It's like a 5-minute walk just to get there. So think about it. That's like a quarter of a mile, third of a mile. So I get down there at the end of the line, and I'm waiting in line out in the sun. It's 9 a.m. in San Diego, and I'm already sweating. I was like, this is not cool. So I have a friend who publishes an independent comic book, so I called her up, and she had an extra exhibitor badge.
Mm-hmm.
So she was able to give that to me, and I managed to get into the hall in advance of everybody else, which I don't consider cheating since I had actually paid my $50, whatever it was, registration fee already. They already had my money.
Yep.
I just used an extra badge to get in early.
Good for you.
But the first thing I wanted to do, really wanted to do, was the Paramount panel, 1:30 on Thursday.
This is a Star Trek.
What's in it in a second, but I want to just set up. It's at 1:30, and I notice that the line is already forming at 10:30.
Jesus.
Because the very first thing I did was I went to the Paramount booth to inquire about Stardust screening passes. And I was told, come back at 4, that's where we're going to start giving them away. So fine. So then I kind of go wander around, and I notice that the line for Hall H, which is a 6,500-seat area, has already started forming at 10:30. And I was like, son of a... There was a DVD panel I wanted to go to from the Digital Bits guys, plus there was a turning your webcomic into a game. I think that was it. But Penny Arcade was part of this panel. So immediately I had to throw those two overboard so I could get in line for the Paramount panel.
See, in general, I don't care if I sit close or far away as long as I get in. So it'd be great if there's a way you could estimate to go, okay, I see it's an enormous line, but I've got another hour.
I completely agree, but because I didn't know that it was a 6,500 seat.
No, I know. That's why I wish there's like a way you could estimate or tell.
Yeah, so I completely agree, but I it was like, I thought about it, and I was like, if I miss this, I will be really pissed, because the panel included Beowulf, some footage of that, which I hadn't seen anything from, plus I'm a huge Neil Gaiman fan, and he's the co-writer. The Spiderwick Chronicles, which I could give a rat's patoot about. Suddenly I'm Harry Potter for... Harry Potter? Henry Potter.
Henry Potter.
From MASH.
Is that
his name?
Oh,
Colonel
Potter, it's Henry
horse
Potter.
Feathers and a horse's patoot. Suddenly
I'm
him.
Henry Potter.
Anyway, Stardust, Neil Gaiman again. Hot Rod, which is that new Adam Sandberg, which I could, you know, I don't care about seeing at the thing, but also Iron Man, Indiana Jones, Star Trek, and the
how long is this panel?
Cloverfield, J.J. Abrams thing. 2 hours.
Damn, I mean, that's like pretty quick. That's a million things to go over in 2 hours.
So I'm back out in the sun sweating, so I kind of got hosed there. But I finally get in and actually got very close to the stage, probably about 10 rows back.
Sweet.
Maybe a little further back.
How'd
sort
you
of
do
off
that?
To the side.
Just because you were like a single?
Pretty much.
I
although
guess everybody there is a single.
That was a surprise. No, there's a lot of teams there.
Yeah.
Like, if John was there, we would have been a team.
Yeah.
I ended up sitting next to the girl I stood in line with, so... So we get up there, and I actually don't remember the order of things. I think Stardust might have been first, which is cool. They showed a whole scene. Neil Gaiman was there with the screenwriter. You know, that was cool. That was, you know, they show footage. They answer some questions, most of the questions being, you know, as the writer of the... Because it started out as a comic, a four-issue comic, and then the writer turned it into a novel, and now it's a movie. And it's like, how do you feel about this being a movie? And he says, well... It's a very good movie. Some things are different from a book, because if you look at it, if you were to do it exactly like the comic, you'd be a quarter of the way in before you actually got to your hero.
Yep.
That doesn't work in a movie. And so he said, I'm very pleased with how it is, blah, blah, blah.
It's good he has that perspective on it.
Yeah, he's... Anyway, so immediately afterwards was Beowulf with Roger Avery, and they showed the trailer had actually been released the night before... on the internet, but that was like, you know, 2 inches by 2 inches. So this was the first official on a big screen showing of the trailer, 2D.
Yep.
Because they shot this also in 3D. And unfortunately, they weren't set up to show that in this hall. So I saw the 2D trailer. Looked pretty cool, because this is, of course, the next generation of Robert Zemeckis's, you know, motion capture animation, which was used on Monster House and Polar Express, which we've discussed in the past. And it looks pretty cool. It was a little hard from the trailer to really grasp, you know, is this really awesome?
Well, it was weird from the trailer, because they do cut to a couple people. First off, it's pretty clear that they're hoping a lot of people don't recognize it's computer animation. And my mom and I saw Bourne Ultimatum the other night, and she didn't realize it was a computer thing.
Well, did she think it was real, or did she think it was...
She thought it was just real, like 300. She thought it was like a 300.
A stylized thing,
but it never occurred to her in any way that it was, because... but if you sat there and look at, like, the Robin Wright pen... She looks weird, like, for that just split second, she looked kind of like the dead eyes look, and then also the John Malkovich looked kind of dead eyes, but Angelina Jolie looked awesome in this thing, and then Ray Winstone, who of course weighs like 50 pounds more than his actual character, looks great. It's hard to know what we'll think of the movie other than, like, the few people I've read that have seen the 20 minutes of it have all been going, oh my God, this looks incredible.
They were showing, you're right, 20 minutes. In fact, later that day, they were showing it twice at a theater a couple blocks away, and I was just unable to get away to go see it. Yeah. And I ended up calling you that night or the next night.
I don't want to see it anyway. I want to see the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's sort of like that 9 minutes of Ratatouille that Pixar released. Like, I don't want to see that big a chunk. I'd rather just see it in the movie, because then I'm just going to be pissed.
Yep.
You know, it's like, I want to see the whole thing then, and then when I actually see the movie, there'll be 20 minutes when I'm bored, because I've seen it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I did not manage to see the 3D footage that they did have there.
But it's still very exciting. I really want to see that movie. My mom was, like, all excited. She can't wait for it to come out, to see the IMAX version. Cause
cool.
Although that said, I saw Polar Express in IMAX, and I know some people said, I didn't like it, and then they saw it IMAX, and it was revelatory. For whatever reason, in general, IMAX 3D movies give me a headache. Superman, watching those scenes in there, all of them. But it sounds clear like this is the place to see that movie, so I'll probably see it when it comes to IMAX. I love the fact that we have a really cool IMAX theater in our town.
Yeah, that's nice. And then the Spiderwick Chronicles, which I had never heard of before. It's another fantasy book series turned into a movie, and they had the authors there. And then they had Phil Tippett, and he was...
Really?
He was cool. So he's doing the effects.
Oh, really? He works for ILM, right?
He used to. Now
so he's on
his own
thing?
He has his own studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was okay. It looks okay, but it looks like yet another fairy tale, which is fine if it's good material. I haven't read the material.
Yeah.
I have no idea if it's good, but it was not that impressive. And it's just one of those things now. I think the timing is bad. If they time the release when there's nothing else out, it'll probably do fine. Anyway, I don't care.
Yeah,
about
but
that.
It's just like a huge glut. It always happens. It's sort of like what do they call those torture porn movies that they had
once.
A glut and now, and honestly, nobody cares. And I think it's the same with these fantasy. The difference with the fantasy movies is, to do them even remotely right, you got to throw a lot of money after them, so they're going to...
And that'll be a problem with Stardust, is how do you convince people it's something else, although that one's got... It's got Michelle Pfeiffer, Robert De Niro, Claire Danes. It's got some recognizable
people. Yeah, but then you have the Golden Compass one or whatever, and it's got Nicole Kidman. You get,
yeah,
all
although
these have...
that one apparently is a fairly... a more well-known book.
Really?
I know people that have at least heard of that book and have read it. So... Hot Rod, which is the Adam Sandberg thing. I don't have any idea why it was at Comic-Con, but there it was, and Adam Sandberg and his two buddies came out and...
Check, check, check.
Booga, booga, booga.
Go ahead. Sorry, we lost for a second there.
That's
we're
right.
Back on.
So the MC of the thing says, you know, Jon Favreau couldn't make it, but here's a taped introduction special for Comic-Con, and you see Jon, and he's like, oh, hi, Comic-Con. We just finished principal photography. We're just about to start editing and doing the effects, and... You know, here's some early, you know, very preliminary animation test that we wanted to give you the first look at. And then they end up showing some 1970s era horrible, almost Clutch Cargo-esque cartoon footage of Iron Man and the Mandarin. And it was hysterical. And then, you know, the lights come back up and Jon Favreau actually runs out on stage and the crowd goes wild. And he actually has a camcorder. And actually, throughout the whole panel, they're saying... You know, please, Comic-Con attendees, the studio's put a lot of effort into bringing you special footage and stars. Please don't record anything you see. Please don't record any footage, concept art. Please don't put that on the internet. Please. Because otherwise the studio's going to stop bringing this cool stuff just for Comic-Con.
Yeah.
They're saying that over and over and over. So Jon Favreau comes out with the camcorder and starts taping the audience, and he says, I wanted to put this up on YouTube. Pretty funny. And Jon Favreau, A, has lost some weight.
Yeah.
I mean, lately he's been fairly bulky. He's lost a lot of weight, but also he looks like Garfunkel. He's got this curly hair, which is suddenly 2 inches out from his head, and he's got a receding hairline. It's really quite Garfunkel-esque.
Not a good look.
Anyway, then they showed an actual Iron Man trailer and some other footage, and it looks pretty cool. It really... and. You know, it looks pretty cool.
Well, I know nothing about Iron Man, but I love Robert Downey Jr. I mean, I just think he's incredible, so it's going to be great.
And then J.J. Abrams came out for a minute to talk about the Cloverfield project, and they showed the one trailer with the Statue of Liberty head being, you know, rolling down the street. And he said, you know, I can't really talk about it other than to say I really just wanted to make a monster movie. You know, we haven't had, like, a Godzilla-type movie in a long time. I just really wanted to see it, so I'm helping to get that made. And he said, as we go further and further, we'll release more details, obviously, including the title. And he's like, we're not calling it Monstrous, which I thought was funny because the only place I'd heard that was on Wells, who immediately said, that would be a horrible title.
Yeah.
And I didn't think so. I was like, whatever, it's just another title. I can think of a lot worse. And then they revealed a teaser poster for it, which was cool. And then he went off stage, and then they did the, and I might be messing up the order of this, but who cares. Then they did a live video feed to the set of Indiana Jones 4.
Yep.
And I'm told that this is available on the internet now.
Yeah, they have it on the Indiana Jones site. That's where I saw it.
Okay, so it starts out with Steven Spielberg, and he's saying, you know, I've made a lot of movies that were for me the past couple of years that I really wanted. This movie is for you, the fans. And, oh, the fans go wild. And then the camera expands, and there's Harrison Ford and Ray Winstone and Shia LaBeouf, the hell his name is. And then they bring out Karen Allen. Is that her name?
Karen Allen.
I always get her and Margot Kidder mixed up in my head.
Karen Allen. Margot Kidder is the one that was crazy.
So they bring her out, and they all talk for a couple minutes. They didn't have George Lucas, but, you know, they were all very – it was cool. And you could tell it was a live feed because the quality was not that good.
Yeah.
And then they brought J.J. Abrams back out to talk about Star Trek. And they didn't say a lot other than, you know, we've got a script that everyone's really excited about. We want to do this right. We're trying to find a cool way to get Shatner in. You know, we've talked with him about it. As of yet, we don't have a cool way to do it. And unless we get a way that makes sense and is cool, we're not going to do it. We're not going to force it in.
Did you see the picture of, you know, the guy they hired to play Spock?
Well, yeah, they...
Did you see the picture that somebody like mashed up before they even knew they were talking to this guy? They said, you got to get that guy from Heroes. And they put a picture. They basically took his face and put it over Spock. And oh my God, it was like clearly they hired the absolute right guy in terms of looks to play Spock on every level. Perfect guy.
Right, so then J.J. Abrams announced that Zachary Quinto, who played Siler on Heroes, is playing young Spock. And he said, you know, that was going to be the big announcement, and the internet kind of stole the thunder on that, but so be it. And they bring him out, and then they actually bring out Leonard Nimoy.
Which must be cool.
And Leonard's saying, you know, my wife is backstage, and she was looking at the both of us together, and she was like, wow, that is creepy. you know, and it kind of got me thinking, you know, if Zachary Quinto hadn't been hired for Heroes... he would not be playing Spock.
Yep, you're right.
It's like, it's funny how things can lead to another, and suddenly everybody's going to know this guy in a year. And anyway.
Well, there's a lot of people on that Heroes. You can see, like, I noticed Ali Larder, who's, like, has been bouncing around. All of a sudden, she's in Heroes, and now she's in this, I saw that trailer for Resident Evil, and I was like, wow, this trailer looks pretty good. And then at the very end, they announced it's Resident Evil, and I realized, okay, this is going to suck. But it's a fun concept because it's like Resident Evil Las Vegas, and it's in this time frame when all of Las Vegas has been overtaken by the sand dunes. So you're just seeing like the spire of the Statue of Liberty or you know, from Vegas or from Paris, the Eiffel Tower, you know, those sticking out. But then they're going to go underground using, you know, I mean, it just looked like an interesting concept, except for the fact that it's Resident Evil. You end up realizing, oh, this really will suck. But you're hopeful, you know, you're hopeful.
And then they talked for a few minutes, and that was pretty much it. You know, Leonard Nimoy said, the reason I'm doing this is because it's a great script.
Yeah.
And then that was pretty much it. And then they gave you could take a, they handed out bags as you came in that probably had 4 t-shirts in it.
Wow.
And some other odds and ends.
Is that what you're wearing there?
Yeah, I'm actually wearing the Star Trek t-shirt that was a freebie. And then they gave you a chit to go up to the fulfillment room, and you could get a poster tube that had like 3 posters in it.
Cool.
So you got the J.J. Abrams Monstrous poster, a Star Trek teaser poster.
Is that the one that just says Star Trek on it with the stars?
And, and a Sweeney Todd poster with Johnny Depp, which I'm probably just going to give to someone at work.
See, I kind of like that poster. I don't know. Who was it? Wells or somebody was all whining about it? I thought it was good, you know? Creepy.
So that was the end of the Paramount panel. I get out. I go hang out by the Paramount booth so I can get the Stardust passes. So I actually get those. And the screening was that night at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So followed by a Q&A with Neil Gaiman.
Yep.
So fine. So I screw around the exhibition hall. I don't remember what. I don't think I saw any other. The Lost panel was that evening at 5. I skipped it. Mainly, I love Lost, but I figured it, what you weren't actually going to learn anything.
Yeah.
What it was going to be was an hour of people coming up and going, well, what about this? And the guy going, I don't know. We'll see. Tune in.
I completely agree that Comic-Con is, for ongoing stuff like that, I don't know. That's what that is.
Well, there are
for.
Some shows where, you know, like,
whoa, geez.
As your cat almost ruins everything. That was incredible.
Crazy cat. We're still going.
I was
going
to say, a show like Futurama, they'll tell you things. They'll say, well, look for that in the next season, or this is what we meant when we did this, because there's no overarching mystery, really. Lost, they can't really tell you anything. So I skipped it, and I was okay with that.
Good for you.
I actually don't remember what else I did that day, but I start towards Horton Plaza, which is an open-air mall in the Gas Lamp District of San Diego, where they were having this Stardust screening. I get some food and get in line.
Yep.
And I get there. Was it a 7 o'clock screening? That's what it was. That's why I didn't do anything else. It was a 7 o'clock screening, and I get there at 5. And I couldn't. There used to be a Fat Burger. in this mall, and now there isn't. So I was kind of pissed because now I didn't know where to eat.
You were looking forward to that Fat Burger.
So I go wander up to the line for Stardust, and I said, oh, there's already a pretty big line here. I get to the end. There's Paramount reps saying, we're already full.
Oh.
I was pissed. Not at that. I was just pissed because I've never been shut out 2 hours ahead of time. You and I have been to a ton of movie
Absolutely.
Screenings like this, and they give out far more passes than capacity.
And you're sitting there worried, I'm not going to get in, and you get in, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and they, you know, it's on movie screenings like this. It says right on the pass, theaters overbooked to ensure capacity. Get there early.
Yep.
So I'm not at all pissed about that. Although apparently they had given out passes outside of Comic-Con. So it was some ridiculous number of passes.
Oh, so it's not even, that's not right.
No,
I mean, because you're insured that.
Because then you're in like 10 to 1.
That's not fair because people going to Comic-Con are guaranteed to want to see it. I mean, what the hell's the point?
So that was, I wasn't pissed at that, although I was upset because I figured 2 hours would have been enough time, but I misjudged. So then I kind of wandered around aimlessly, and I think that's when I called you and we talked for like half an hour.
Yep. And then my pizza arrived.
And you shut me down.
Sorry. I was so hungry. I hadn't eaten since the day before.
So that was Thursday. So Friday, Warner Brothers panel is the first thing.
Hang on, let me think. Warner Brothers. Batman?
They did not end up showing anything because they're filming right now.
What else? I don't know what else Warner Brothers is doing.
Hold on. I brought my program guide and I'm Sweet. Looking it up. So in order to do this, I had to skip the Pixar thing where they were going to talk about Wall-E, which I was... There we go. Warner Brothers. Invasion.
Oh, yeah. The third remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
So Joel Silver was there.
This is the one where they hired that awesome director of... That German director who directed the Hitler movie, the one in the bunker and everything, and then they proceeded to fire him and hire like the Wachowski brothers to refilm everything.
Apparently there wasn't enough actual action in it.
Yeah.
So yeah, they hired Joel Silver, who's the executive producer, hires the Wachowskis to punch it up.
Who's good buddies with the Wachowskis.
Apparently they like reshot 2/3 of it or something.
Yeah, apparently.
So there was a taped introduction from Nicole Kidman, and who cares?
Yep. And this is the one where they had that accident where they're filming, and then there was all over YouTube where they had an accident. Nicole Kidman almost got hurt, but a bunch of stuntmen got hurt where this car was going around this corner.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, they showed a trailer and very little of Daniel Craig in it, which is surprising.
That they also, I've heard reports, people have seen the movie, that now that they've done all this stuff, they've like cut like a third of Daniel Craig out of the movie and punched up Nicole Kidman more. Which is weird. So
yeah,
especially given where he is these days, you'd be surprised they put less of him in the movie.
Exactly. I don't know. It doesn't look bad, but it doesn't look that good either.
Yeah.
I could care less. They also had I forgot about this. One Missed Call, which is another Hong Kong horror film, or I'm sorry, not Hong Kong, Japanese horror film remake.
Remake.
It's like you get a call on your cell phone, and it's you hear yourself dying in a week or whatever.
Oh, Christ.
And it had Edward Burns and Shannon Sossaman, who I have no idea who that is. They come out, And it's clear nobody cares.
Yeah,
few people come up to ask questions, and I was glad because it would have been embarrassing if that 6,500 people, man, nobody could ask a question. But who cares?
Yeah, nobody's heard of it. Nobody knows it's coming down the pike.
And it's clear that it's going to suck. Then Whiteout, which is an actual...
That's the Kate Beckinsale comic movie,
it's a
right?
comic book, 4-issue limited series, graphic novel, actually made into a movie. And the author was there, Greg Rucka, and then I think Joel Silver produced this one, too.
Was the hottest chick of Comic-Con there?
Kate Beckinsale ended up showing up late. She was stuck behind a freight train. So this ended up being a really long portion of the panel of them just kind of vamping till she showed up. And I have to admit, she was brilliant. It's clear she's very intelligent, and she's a smartass.
That's what I was telling you.
And I didn't believe you.
Yep.
It's because usually these hot, really hot chicks are doorknobs. They're total idiots.
Well, her dad is like some famous actor, and she grew up kind of in this elite era of it. And I've heard her interview, and she's you get the feeling she'd drive you nuts, but she clearly is intelligent and clearly likes messing with people.
Well, and it's one of the things about these Q&As throughout Comic-Con is the stars, a lot of these people are like politicians. They tend to answer the question you wish that they had asked.
Yeah.
And so, like, one person came up and asked Kate what... The question was sort of a method acting question.
When are you going to get naked in a movie again?
No.
They didn't ask that.
Again, was she actually naked in something before?
Oh, yeah. She was naked in... what was the movie? There's this weird Spanish movie... and she was like very younger and she was naked in it.
I will have to,
as she takes off her top, you realize she also doesn't shave her underarms, which kind of ruins the effect.
I'll have to check that out.
And she has this very short haircut, but she's smoking in that movie.
Anyway, the question was like, as you're acting on Underworld or in this Whiteout, you know, how, if you're playing a badass, are you a badass when the camera's off? Like, it was sort of a, you know, when you're on set, are you hardcore into your character even when the camera's off? Which I thought was a valid question.
Yep.
And she sort of took that to mean, what are the differences between your Underworld character and your Whiteout character?
Yep.
Which is a federal marshal in the Arctic.
Yep.
Like Antarctic, I believe. But her answer was hysterical. She says, well, in Underworld, when I was in the vinyl bodysuit, any time I bent over to pick something up, anyone behind me would go, ugh. And on this film, whenever that happened, nobody would do that because I was wearing a parka. I thought that was brilliant. Anyway, she had some other really funny comments. It actually looks like a pretty good film, although the trailer, which they showed a couple times, was a little too cliche. It's like, you know, it gets 300 degrees below zero there. Night could last 6 months. And you're like, give it up.
I thought the poster sucked.
I don't even know that I've seen the poster. Then they had, Get Smart, where they brought out...
honestly, I think that's going to be great.
It's looking pretty good.
I've seen little previews, and I think it's...
They brought out the director.
And Carell seems absolutely perfect.
They brought out a couple of the bit actors. One of the guys who's on Studio 60, Masioka, who's Hero on Heroes.
Yep.
They brought out The Rock.
And that's right. He's in it. I forgot.
And then they brought out Steve Carell.
Oh, man.
And they took some questions. They showed some footage. Pretty, you know, nothing really to report on. There was no revelations in the panel other than it looks pretty cool.
Who's directing them?
I have no idea. Hmm. And The Rock was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Somebody asked him, a girl gets up there and asks him, what can you bench? And he was like, what do you weigh? Which was really funny.
I'm surprised he hasn't hit bigger. You know, when I used to watch him on wrestling, and you could always see how smart and quick on his feet he is. And sometimes that translates really well into movies, and it seemed like he was going somewhere. And then last year, it's like, what happened?
I have to say, for being a wrestler, he's really impressive. He's a really good actor.
Yeah, he's funny, and when you're watching that wrestling, you could see his character. You could kind of see that, but I'm surprised he hasn't done better. I liked a couple of his movies, but it's like he hasn't done anything lately.
And then probably the biggest draw for the comic book dorks, like myself, was that Zack Snyder was going to be talking about Watchmen.
Oh, yeah.
So this is one of the seminal comic book series.
Where's that in production? Is that, like, finished and they're putting together?
No, it's pre-production.
Okay.
It's been, you know, it's a 12-issue comic series, You know, it's considered seminal in the comic book world.
And like, this is what's his name did it, the
Alan Moore and
Who hates all adaptations.
Who does now? He wrote From Hell, which was about the Jack the Ripper.
Which I love that movie. I don't know the original, but I love that movie. And boy, if you ever want to hear a depressing commentary track, listen to that one as one of the Hughes brothers, talks about how painful the experience was making this movie, how fundamentally depressing it was, how I guess it's okay so far, and I guess some of the reviews are good, but I thought it was a really well-done movie, and it was depressing listening to him because it was a wholly unpleasant experience for them as they got people wanted to change things, as they got pressure, as it got released in a funny way. You know, it was weird to hear this. You know, it was really...
That's too bad.
It was really honestly depressing to listen to that commentary track. The worst, most depressing I've ever heard, ever.
Wow. So Zack Snyder, who directed 300, and this film has been kicking around for a while because it's considered very difficult to film.
Yep.
If there's a lot of material, there's a lot going on. It's going to be very hard to squeeze it into even 3 hours. There's a lot of different layers, and it's been considered very difficult to film. Paul Greengrass was attached for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
That would have been an interesting, take
I totally
it.
Agree, but now it's Zack Snyder. And so he gets up there and he starts talking about it, and you learn that Zack Snyder is a really boring guy.
Oh, really?
Because there's nothing the comic book nerds want to learn more about than turning Watchmen into a movie.
Yep.
And this guy, and I could look around and you could see people were getting bored. The person sitting next to me was like, this guy is tedious.
Wow.
And he's just rambling on about how much Watchmen means to him and how it fits into society, and he's really going to try and take an authentic view and blah, 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 blah,
wow.
blah, blah, blah.
Boy, and taking all that goodwill from 300 and just flushing it to
well,
the fans.
Well, it's not that he's flushing it. It's just that he wasn't saying anything remotely interesting.
Yep.
He did have a few points. He said it is going to be rated R. They're not going to, which is fine because the material is rated R. And he said, and clearly that's one reason they gave it to him, is that with 300, he made an R-rated film.
That made
a lot of money.
Yep.
He said they're one of the that won't matter to anyone who hasn't read it. He just said they're going to try and be as respectful as possible. And the best thing he said was, you know, we all like Alan Moore. We all really respect him. We want to do and honor the material as best we can. My fondest wish is that in many, many, many years, when maybe Alan Moore is bored and he turns on the TV and he sees it and he watches it and he says, they didn't F that up that bad. That's my fondest wish. And I thought, you know,
that's a pretty good attitude. That's a good way. Because if he says, well, I'm hoping he's going to love it. He's not. He's going to be mad the whole time. So to say it that and knowing that going in, because he's so famous for that, that's probably a really good way of approaching it.
Yeah, and I think he's probably going to do a pretty good job, despite the fact that he was boring in this panel. And then he announced a lot of the cast. That was supposed to be his big thing, even though, you know, I saw it on Ain't It Cool the week before. The internet.
Who's in it? Anybody?
Billy Crudup.
Oh yeah,
is going to be Dr. Manhattan, which is sort of a Superman-esque character.
Is a golden god.
That was the best moment from that film. Some blonde chick I never heard of is going to be the Silk Spectre, and he brought her out on stage, and people clapped, but nobody knew who she was. This is interesting. Jackie Earle Haley is going to be Rorschach.
What a great comeback for that dude, man.
I know. And then I don't think they announced anybody else. They might have. But those were the biggies. Oh, actually, he did announce a couple other names, which I didn't recognize. You know, and it's a non-star cast, basically.
Yeah.
And that was it.
The Warner Brothers?
So that was a little... I was expecting a lot more from Zack for the Watchmen thing, but...
I'm surprised they didn't do anything Batman, because they've been filming this thing.
I was surprised, too.
Maybe it's because they're currently filming and they just can't do it. What was the name of... I don't know if you've been hearing reports from this, but the Chicago Sun-Times has decided to get all into the fact they're filming Batman, and they were the ones that figured out that this movie called... It's like... Tony's First Kiss is actually Batman filming in their town. And no, it's called Rory's First Kiss.
That's awesome.
So, and they're going, but they've been trying to get all kinds of coverage, and it's really cool. I've been seeing, you know, you'll see a lot of YouTube clips of some effects, and there's a lot of practical effects, and there's like this truck going down the middle of this street, and it gets blown over topwards, and it's like, wow, this is going to be awesome. Is it Christopher Nolan directing it again? Okay, cool.
And then after that was supposed to be the Fox panel, but Fox pulled out. And it's
so they canceled their entire panel.
It looks like it in the program.
What is going on with Fox, man?
It's in the program guide. It said, you know, as of press time, there was no, you know, information available. And I just assumed they would have something. I left anyway, and then I checked back a couple minutes later, and it looked like they were just going to do a trailer park, which is show a bunch of trailers.
So no Futurama?
Well, no, that was separate.
Okay. But so what is going on with Fox? I mean, they are just bizarre.
Well, we talked about this in our last episode, which is suddenly they've gotten incredibly reticent about doing anything any advanced promo for their movies. They're ridiculous. Then I went to a Neil Gaiman panel, but by doing that, I mostly missed. There was a panel about the DVD releases of 300, who cares, but also Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And Ridley Scott was going to be there.
Oh, I can't wait to
see. I thought, it would have been cool to see Ridley Scott. That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But I almost could care less what he has to say about a new Blade Runner DVD, because I feel like I've heard everything there is to hear about Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm going to hear anything new from him about that subject.
That said, I'm so infatuated with that movie, and it's kind of pathetic because I have three different versions of Blade Runner I own, and I think three, maybe two, and I clearly am going to buy that $80 five DVD set because I love that movie. I love everything about it. I love reading the stories about it. I love to see, I was like, oh my God, they're fixing the scene where what's her name was running through. Cause you know, there's the famous scene where, what's her name? Joanne, I can't remember her name, but the actress where she's the prostitute, Dance with the Snake, and Harrison Ford shoots at her, misses her, but somehow doesn't manage to hit the glass she's about to run through. So they've apparently fixed that. They refilmed scenes. I mean, it's like, I can't wait. I literally cannot wait. I love this story. I love the arc. I love everything. I did you see the Ridley Scott is filming? Is just in pre-production for another movie with Russell Crowe. I mean, it's funny how Russell Crowe is considered this horrible guy to work with, and Ridley Scott is also considered a very hard actor director to work for, and boy, they keep working together.
Good for them. I like
their stuff. Think it's too cool. And even if that year in Provence movie or whatever, a good year, didn't do that well, I like them for trying, and I like that they're filming another one. But literally three movies in a row, Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe together.
That'll be cool.
Yep.
I've got about 20 minutes, I figure.
Yep.
So I have to sort of ram through.
Sweet.
Then I went to an American Dad panel, which is...
I might be the only one. I don't like that show at all.
But so they had all the voice cast there, including Seth MacFarlane.
Yep.
And they did a read-through of an episode, which was honestly, it was a pretty good episode. There were a lot of good jokes in it, and the read-through was hysterical.
That must be fun to watch.
It really was. You almost wouldn't think so, but it really was.
Do they do their recordings with everybody there, or do they do them separately?
I don't know. I would assume so, because I don't think these particular actors are doing too many other things.
Yeah.
And it went really well, and Seth MacFarlane answered some questions afterwards. And somebody asked him, because Seth MacFarlane's big into musicals.
Yep.
And he said, you know, Sound of Music is my favorite movie. And you could kind of hear the crowd going, what? Boo. And a couple girls clapped. And he's like, you know what? The girls are cheering, so I could give a shit.
Yeah.
It was really funny. Anyway, that was a really good panel. I ended up he also did a Family Guy one, unfortunately. So then I stuck my head into another, well, nobody cares about that. So that night, I had to blow off Kevin Smith, and
should have seen that one, man. What? I've been watching.
I'll tell you why I had to blow it off, and you'll hate me.
I think you already did.
Yeah, I think I left it a message, but. And then the other big thing they were doing was they were showing 300 at Petco Park, which is the new baseball field where the Padres play, which is right across the street from. It's very close to the convention center, and I had tickets to that. And I was sort of on the fence because just DVD, I'm going to get it. I'm going to see it in my home theater, quote unquote.
You've already seen it anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm going to see it in a really good environment. And I was like, even at you know,
unless they brought actual Persians and Trojans out there to beat the crap out of each other, I'm not interested.
That would be a unique experience.
Yeah, that's true.
Later on, I found out they just showed it on the Jumbotron. I assumed they were doing an inflatable screen, yeah, a la outdoor cinema, to have a bigger screen. So
it's like holding an iPod, video iPod, yeah, in front of your arm.
I don't know
like
how big the
away.
Petco Jumbotron is, but can't it wasn't that big. So that I'm okay now that I missed that. But I missed it so that I could
Hang on. You also missed Kevin Smith.
Yes.
And on video, they've been showing this one YouTube video of some guy going up and saying, "So is your next movie going to be actually good and not rehash all your former characters and bring them something like that?" He's calling him out. And Kevin Smith, I mean, you just don't mess with Kevin Smith, and he eviscerates this guy in the most funny way possible.
I'll have to check that out.
So it's very funny. I'll send you the link, but it's very, very, very funny. He's so good.
So I learned earlier that day that my friend who publishes the comic book, one of her co-creators, although she's not a creator, she's the business end.
Yep.
This guy ended up having passes to see Superbad, the
new
you
bastard.
Judd Apatow film.
Oh, you bastard.
Who produced it. And I was like, I hadn't even heard about this. I was like, really? Followed by a Q&A with the cast and crew.
Oh, you very big bastard.
So
you.
I was like, I'm going to this. They gave me a pass because they had other stuff they were going to do. Gave me a pass. So I left to go get it. And it was a 7 o'clock screening. I think I left like well in advance.
Like 1 in the afternoon.
So that I could go get in line for this thing. And there already was a line at this theater.
Yep.
Pacific Gas Lamp. But I got there early enough that I was going to get in. There was no question. So I waited in line basically for 2 hours. I mean, I had a book, and there's plenty of other nerds in line, too. I get in, and we watch the film, and free popcorn and a free soda.
Jesus.
I have never seen that in the screening.
Wow.
That was awesome.
Wow.
It was the security. You had to check your cell phone and any cameras in a little bag, and they gave you a claim ticket. And yet I still managed to see a picture on the internet from that panel on Jeffrey Wells's site.
That's
he linked
funny.
To it. Fantastic film. Everything you have heard about it in terms of it being hysterical is accurate. It is a great film. You will love it.
Everything, including the fact that Seth Rogen and the other cop are horrible.
The cops were a little pushing it, but not that much. Honestly.
So you think he needs to quell his anger over that?
You know what? I totally see where he's coming from. I just don't care that much about it.
It was a minor major part?
In between, honestly, because it's a subplot.
Yep.
But it is a brilliantly funny movie. The dialogue is amazing. The interplay between the two and a half, three main actors is fantastic.
Yep.
It's just a real, and it's Michael Cera, yep, who was the George Michael on Arrested Development. It's Jonah Hill, who was, I think he was in Knocked Up, although I can't for the life of me remember what he was.
He's like the fat kid, and
well, I guess he was one of the guys in the dorm house.
Yeah.
But he was also in The 40-Year-Old Virgin as the guy in the eBay store who wanted to buy the disco shoes with the goldfish in them.
Yep.
So, I want to buy these. that guy. And then a new guy who you haven't heard of playing sort of their nerdy buddy that they want to avoid. And then Seth Rogen and Sam Hader. I think that's his name from SNL.
Yep.
Just a great, great movie. It's, you know, they're always talking about how, you know, when are we going to see the next Porky's? And Kevin Smith saying, you know, we were trying to make Mallrats the next Porky's, and it just didn't turn out that way. This is as close to Porky's, which I haven't seen in forever, and it's just sort of the teen sex comedy. It's really good, and it's really authentic.
Well, Porky's was very funny, but it wasn't particularly well written.
I haven't even seen it in that. I don't know why people hold. I think it was just, it was the first one to be that successful for that sort of thing.
When it came out, it was like around 82. I mean, it was so god dang funny. It was funny to the point that your milk coming out of your nose, but it wasn't that well written. In fact, it was kind of stupid, but there was a lot of clever stuff. And from that perspective, actually 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up are pretty close to that.
Anyway, apparently the tracking on this film's a little soft, so I hope it does well. It really, and then anyway, the Q&A afterwards with Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, who co-wrote it with Seth Rogen, And then Michael Cera, Jonah Hill, the guy who played McLovin, which is the new guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and then the director, Greg Mottola. Pretty good Q&A. And then Judd Apatow's wife, who was, she was off to the side. She wasn't in the film, but that
she's
was
she's the
cool.
one from the 40-year-old.
It was interesting, as, you know, as the audience is in there, and, like, the stars come in to take their seats, it was like, oh, look, there's Michael Cera, and the crowd goes wild. It was really cool just that you could applaud these people for being.
Have you seen his web TV show that he does?
I heard about it, but no.
It's pretty funny. It's pretty good. It's him and his buddy. It's the Mike and something show or something and Mike show. But it's pretty funny. That guy is, for how young he has developed a persona that is, I mean, he basically plays the same variation on the same guy. But it's really good, and it fits really well within this older group of actors and directors that he worships.
And it really struck me in this film. He's a great actor.
Absolutely.
He does a great job in this film just portraying his part. And you're right, for someone that young to have that much, I mean, it's a variation of the same
comic
thing.
Presence is the thing I'm thinking of. He just, to recognize this timing and where he comes from and how he is. I mean, the guy, just incredible.
Somebody, one of the questions in the Q&A was, so are you just a wild man off camera or like just opposite your parts? And his response, and he was dressed exactly like George Michael would have been dressed. And his response was, George dude, Michael. Look at me. Anyway.
George Michael Bluth.
So after the screening, like, they're all in the lobby, and then the crowd came out, and they got stuck in the lobby signing autographs and taking pictures.
Yep.
So I've got a picture with Michael Cera.
Sweet.
Which was awesome, and I told him he did a great job in the film, so I feel good.
Yep.
Because a lot of times when you meet someone famous like that, you'll say something stupid and regret it for the rest of your life.
Yep.
So I got a picture with Michael Cera. I got a picture with Seth Rogen. Yes, that's so awesome.
Sweet.
And I told him I thought he was hysterical, which was kind of lame, but...
Yeah, when I met Werner Herzog, I told him, your movies are awesome. That was what I told him.
And I would have gotten a picture with Judd Apatow, but he managed to skedaddle before I could get over
Apatow.
There. Apatow. I do have a picture of him standing in front of the stand-up for Superbad. So that was a great experience.
Sweet.
That was great. Next day, Saturday,
mm-hmm.
because there was... In one ballroom, ballroom 20, there was a Battlestar Galactica panel, a Futurama panel, and a Joss Whedon panel right after each other.
Jesus.
I just figured I had better camp the whole day in this room.
They don't kick you out. You can stay in them. Sweet.
Exactly. I think it's too much. I think logistically it's too tough to clear the room.
Yep.
And they'd piss off too many people. So I get there.
Boy, that sucks if you just want to see Joss Whedon.
Yeah, it does.
Because you better first panel whether you like it or not.
So I get there figuring I could use my exhibitor badge to get in a little early.
Yep.
I get there around 9. But apparently you could line up for the events earlier. So people have been in line since 7.
Jesus.
So I get there and the line, I mean, it's just an insane line. I won't even describe where it went because it won't mean anything if you haven't been to the exhibition. Or the convention center, an insane line. I honestly didn't think I'd get in. The first thing in that room was the screening of the Bionic Woman pilot, which I was interested in. And then after that was a TV Guide What's Hot panel, which who cares?
I think what's hot is seeing Bionic Woman, then hearing her interviewed in that hot British accent.
And then after that was a Heroes panel, and it's clear a ton of people wanted to see that. And then Battlestar, and then anyway. So I get in line. And I actually got in. I was towards the back of the room, but I didn't care. So I saw the Bionic Woman, and it was okay. I felt like the second half was full of...
Sorry, I killed it again. Go ahead. Bionic Woman and House X. I know we only got a few minutes.
Well,
the thing is with Bionic Woman is it's clearly this is their premium thing. But I've been... I mean, this is the one that they'd filmed it. Then after the pilot, I don't know what was on the pilot, but... They've sort of famously jettisoned half the characters.
No.
This is the one where they had the... Okay, so tell me...
according to the producer on stage, he said There was one character, which is the main Lindsay Wagner's sister, was recast and reshot.
And then
that was it.
And then what about what's his name from Grey's Anatomy that's now joined the cast?
There was no discussion of that.
Okay. Well, clearly, it seems like a troubled project to me. That said, the scenes I saw, the preview, which is one of those 20 at 20 things before Bourne Ultimatum, looked like pretty good action scenes. I mean, it looked like they put a lot of money in them, but
yeah, it's not bad. And it's just that, you know, too many cliches, and you know, the mantra they kept repeating was that the character's learning how to be what she is, and then trying to keep her humanity, and that's what makes it different than all the other shows.
Right. You're like, that's what makes it the same as all the other shows.
I just thought, dude, if that's your defining factor, you're dead.
Yeah.
Because that did not, it was so, who cares? I don't know. It's, like I said, it's not bad, but it was not bowl you over great either.
Yeah.
And then the TV Guide panel ended up not being bad. They had executive producers from, excuse me, my cold's affecting my voice, 4400, Heroes, I think they might have had a Jericho person. It ended up not being a bad panel, but it was just kind of random. Then the Heroes panel, where they had almost the entire cast and the creator Tim Kring and Jeff Loeb.
They must be filming, because how else can you get the whole cast there?
Well, because they made a point of saying, you know what, we came with this pilot last year. Nobody had heard of us. Nobody knew anything. And because of the word of mouth that you guys did,
it was a very good pilot.
We got a foothold.
Or at least that, I don't know if it's the pilot, but the very first episode was good.
Anyway, so the whole Heroes ensemble are very appreciative of Comic-Con, because they feel like it was instrumental to their success.
Yep.
So they have no problem bringing everybody there. And it was an okay panel, but again, you don't really learn anything new.
It was Hayden Panettiere there or whatever. Now that she's 18, we can now legally lust after her.
They showed a clip reel from the second season, and it was all hyper quick cuts, and you didn't really learn anything, so who cares? The funniest thing was there was some feedback on the mics, and I didn't even notice it, but Jeff Loeb's like, can we get a sound guy to fix the feedback so that we don't have Masioka crawling around trying to redo the wiring? And I look.
Oh, that's right.
And there's Masioka down on his hands and knees in front of the table fiddling with the mic cord.
That's right. He was like an animator or an engineer or something.
He worked at ILM as a software guy.
Right. That's hilarious.
And Jeff Loeb's like, is there an AV person in the house maybe at Comic-Con? And that got a huge laugh.
That's hilarious.
That was a really funny moment. And like I said, it was an okay panel, but they're all softball questions. Like, how awesome is it to be a Heroes actor? And let's go down the table. So awesome. So awesome. So awesome.
Oh, man.
I mean, what are you going to do? Next up was...
why I'm surprised you didn't hit that Kevin Smith panel, but I see why now. But
it was mainly because I had seen Kevin Smith before.
I know.
Multiple panels, and I love Kevin Smith. But I figured the opportunity to see Superbad and the
afterwards. There's no choice whatsoever. It's obvious.
Judd and Seth Rogen, those guys are only going to get more popular and never feel the need to do that again.
I know. No, you'll see Seth Rogen when Green Hornet comes down. But Judd Apatow, you'll never see him again, ever. He'll start getting reclusive. He'll turn into Jim Carrey. And
Battlestar Galactica had Mary McDonnell, Katie Sackhoff plays Starbuck. Trisha Helfer, who plays the Cylon 6, and then Lucy Lawless was there.
She in that show?
She does. She's a guest star.
Oh.
And then Ronald Moore and David Icke, who are executive producers. And it was an okay panel, but I was kind of frustrated. I thought it would be better. But it ended up being a little like just random questions, and they didn't really tell you anything I didn't already know. So I was just okay. Futurama panel was great. They had almost the entire voice cast up there. So I saw Billy West, Maurice LaMarche, Jean DiMaggio, Katie Sagal.
Sagal.
Whatever. As well as Matt Groening and David X. Cohen.
How's she look? She look good?
She looks pretty good.
Yep.
They had produced a special mini comic. Sort of, which was supposed to serve as a bridge between the end of the series and the new episodes. And they did a table read of that, which was okay. And then they did some Q&A, and they basically said, so what they're doing is it's four new movies.
Yep.
feature-length movies that will then be split up into four episodes apiece and shown on, I think, Comedy Central.
And then they have additional episodes beyond that, they were saying. Is that true or not true? Option, maybe it is.
And so somebody asked, well, what's next? And they said, enough people have to watch what we've done so far, and it's clear that if they get good enough ratings, there will be more. So that's the next
step. So the movies, they're released DVD, then they go to Comedy Central.
Yes, okay. As cut up. Yep. You know, they said, you know, it's somewhat challenging because having to cut something up into four parts messes with your standard three-act structure, plus every individual episode has to have a defining arc. They said it's been really tough, but we've done it. We've got all the original creative team is back.
Yep.
You know, the music guy, the animation, all the voice cast, everybody's back. They said, you know, they had to cut some corners, but you're not going to notice it. Stuff like, we're not using a live orchestra for the music cues.
Yep.
But honestly, the synthetic stuff is so good now, you're not going to notice. So that's a downside, but we had to cut money somewhere.
Yep. I cannot wait. So that was awesome. Literally cannot wait. That's like the thing I'm most excited about.
Then Joss Whedon, he was really cool. He said, you know what? Clearly writing the Wonder Woman script and then having it not be picked up was hard on him. And he's working on a film called Goners, and he's really frustrated at wanting to get so many projects and ideas out and not being able to. So it looks like he's really looking hard at alternate distribution methods, like the J. Michael Straczynski, who does Babylon 5, sort of the direct-to-DVD movie thing. And, you know, Joss is looking at clearly other methods of getting his stuff out there. So
I hear him,
cool.
But man, that sounds kind of low budget to me.
Well, yes, I totally agree. I don't want to see Firefly unless it's going to look awesome.
Yeah.
But if he finds a way to do it, totally.
Yep.
You know, and he said, you know, there'll be a Serenity sequel if somebody is, you know, if the new forthcoming specialty DVD sells a ton. You never know. Nobody's ruled it out.
Yep.
So let's see. Then I saw a writer named Warren Ellis that night, but nobody cares.
We're out of time.
I'm just about out of time. That was Sunday. I attended the Voice Actors panel.
Cool.
So that had Tom Kenny, who does SpongeBob, and of course is on Mr. Show. The April something or other, who's on South Park and does almost all the female voices there.
Who replaced that one gal that committed suicide a long time ago.
A couple of people were on, a couple other people I didn't recognize, and Maurice LaMarche, who after the panel, I got a picture with Maurice LaMarche, and you're
awesome.
Like the only person who, if I called up and said, dude, I got a picture with Maurice LaMarche, I don't have to explain who that is or why it's cool. He's
Bender, right?
What's that?
No, he's not. No, Joe DiMaggio.
No,
Bender.
He's the announcer. He's Lur. He's Morbo. He's Kif Croker. He's the brain from Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah, Kif Croker.
He's a great, great guy.
He is awesome. What does he look like?
A normal guy. He's got kind of a dark Italian, swarthy skin tone.
Because that Kif is such a great character. You know, it's just such a self-absorbed, and he plays it so damn well.
He's a great. It was a pretty cool panel. Afterwards, I ended up seeing Tom Kenny at the Nickelodeon booth, and he was clearly finishing up, and I was like, oh man, if I get a picture with Tom Kenny, more so because of Mr. Show than SpongeBob. And he put on his sunglasses, and he's leaving. I managed to get in behind him, and he's clearly trying to leave, and I was like, okay, screw the picture, I just want to say hi. And I said, Mr. Kenny, and he accelerated. And I was like,
ran.
You know what, just... not cool. Just let him go.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with you. He just needs
to
go.
Right, he just, you know, because if I stop him, suddenly five other people are going to stop him, and he just wants to leave. And suddenly I felt bad for even trying to intercept him, and I felt like a total heel. But all I wanted to say was, dude, Mr. Show kicks ass. And, you know, so
Mustard A-O-Nay.
If I had caught up to him, he would have been cool with that. But, you know, you just got to let him go because it's not cool to try and...
Yeah.
To intercept someone when they're trying to leave and not
Absolutely.
Be swamped. The rest was all exhibitor room. And there's more to talk about, but I have to go see The Bourne Ultimatum.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Well, we were a wrap up then, dude.
So next week we'll finish up some Comic-Con stuff.
Talk about Bourne Ultimatum, Ratatouille.
Some bigger picture stuff. I think
How I Kick Your Ass. I saw Ratatouille.
Okay.
And How I Kick Your Ass on Xbox and Prey.
Whatever.
My new game.
Big whatever.
I'm clearly better than you at the games.
I've been busy. So tune in next week as we finish up Comic-Con and all that stuff that Richard just talked about, and more as well. Thanks for listening. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And that's it.